The greatest inspiration in my life is my dad. My mom passed away when I was younger. What I witnessed from when I was 5 until my early adulthood was a true miracle. He maintained a full-time job. I never missed a practice. I never missed a game. He taught me the importance of being there for people and showing up in the most important moments and creating opportunities for those people.
What a great mentor to have in your life. Are you looking to increase sales, grow your brand, and share your leadership message? Then check out our business podcast program. Each week, more people listen to podcasts than have Netflix accounts, and 1/3 of the U.S. population listens to podcasts regularly. So your customers and team are already listening to podcasts. It should be yours. Discover our 5-step profitable podcast framework and what results you can expect for your company by setting up a 20-minute call with my team at benleads.com/schedule. That's benleads.com/schedule.
Welcome back to Lead the Team with number one best-selling author and in-demand corporate trainer, Ben Fanning. On this podcast, the world's most innovative senior leaders share their top success strategies to motivate your direct reports, cultivate your top leaders, and accelerate your career. Let's get started. Here's Ben.
Hey there, Lead the Team. Welcome back. Here we go again for another great episode coming your way today. I have for you Dustin Swankowski, who is co-CEO at BellyMed US, an innovative medical technology company in the infection control space. And they are solely focused, which is unique for them. They are solely focused on sterile processing. We're making the sterile processing equipment for the world's hospital operating rooms. I mean, what an important niche that they serve. And Dustin, by the way, was a former D1 athlete. And within BellyMed, he worked his way up over 8 years from account executive to the C-suite. Dustin, welcome to Lead the Team.
Thanks, Ben. I'm excited to be here.
So you had a pretty rapid ascension over there at BellyMed. 8 years, account executive to the C-suite. What was the key that helped you in your great career acceleration?
That's a question I get asked a lot by both peers, but also internal employees. I think I don't have one specific thing that I can pinpoint, but I go back to my entire career, my life, and there are a couple of themes I think that allow me to really hone in on the essence of that career trajectory. I think one and first and foremost is I've had great mentors, both at BellyMed and in my personal life. There's two specifically at BellyMed that I'd be remiss not to mention. That's Sean O'Brien and Joe McDonald. Joe was actually our previous CEO in the US. And so they showed me the path to what being a true leader is and how to inspire and lead people. And then in my personal life, I've had the opportunity to be around a lot of great coaches and a lot of great leaders, as well as in my family life. The greatest inspiration in my life is my dad. And so being able to witness how my dad raised me, which is a little unique, I think provided me all of the great insight to be the leader that I am today. But it didn't come without hard work. And so being able to work hard and stay dedicated to the people and team around me has allowed me the success to be where I am today at BellyMed.
So you mentioned your race in a unique way by your dad. What was the unique way?
Yeah. So actually a single parent. So unfortunately, my mom passed away when I was younger. And so my dad was working a full-time job, had this 5-year-old that was probably a little crazy, wanted to kick a soccer ball against anything that moved, and had to figure out and harness like, hey, how do I support this? And what I witnessed from when I was 5 until, you know, my early adulthood was what I call a true miracle. He maintained a full-time job. I never missed a practice. I never missed a game. I never missed an opportunity to do something that I wanted. And he was always right there by my side and in my corner. And so what he taught me was not only how to be a superhero, but he taught me the importance of being there for people and showing up in the most important moments and creating opportunities for those people.
Oh man, what a great mentor to have in your life. And, you know, I have read, you might have, I'm trying to think of the research from maybe Malcolm Gladwell, where David, have you read David and Goliath in there?
I have, but it's been some time.
Okay. Well, there's a story in there, or there's research on children who have lost parents at a young age and how oftentimes they go on to achieve great success. And I think it's, and I don't remember exactly what the research is. And I think a lot of it, based on what I'm remembering, is that that's such a difficult, I mean, incredibly difficult time, I'm sure. But you persevered through that and it gives you this source of resilience. And I'm just curious, how do you think that plays out in your life today?
Yeah, I think one, you learn to grow up pretty quickly, right? And I remember vividly at times, like in my early teens, like, you know, my friends are, you know, leaning on both parents and leaning on things. And really it was my dad and I, we were the tag team. We were doing things together, right? And so I think what it taught me was that, you know, not every situation that you enter or situation that you're given is going to be perfect, right? You're going to have to find unique ways to navigate those challenges and obstacles and overcome those and not get defeated if things don't go your way. Now, while my dad was a great mentor and leader, he had an army behind him, right? Of all of my friends and my family that was there to support him and support me as well. And so not only did it teach resilience, but I think it taught me the importance of having a strong team around you. And it really drove home for me that you can achieve a lot more as being part of a team than you ever are going to be as an individual.
Is that when the idea of leadership really clicked for you?
Yeah, it was exactly in that moment. I remember vividly, I was 13, I think, or 14. And it was kind of at that stage where we were choosing high schools and my club soccer team. We were, you know, the people that were going to continue to play soccer competitively were going to stay together. And those were going to kind of go off their own different directions. And I had a situation that didn't necessarily go the way that I wanted it to go. And my dad was there not to tell me that, man, they should have picked you or you should have done, you know, you're way better than them. He was there to give me the brutal truth. And the brutal truth was that I had some work to do and I needed to really figure out if I wanted to commit to it and put in the work to be as good as I knew that I could be. And so what that allowed me to do through a leadership perspective, now, if I reflect on that, was it's those moments where you can be brutally honest with someone and challenge them in a way that they need to be challenged that they may not see themselves. And being able to provide that outside perspective was really key.
So how did he, so you were a teenager at the time?
I was.
So I've got a 13-year-old, by the way. Connor. How did he frame this blunt, brutal feedback to you so you could hear it?
Yeah, so it was funny. My dad and I had an agreement or a pact, I will call it. So I was definitely someone that, you know, when I was playing, I didn't love like the parents yelling and screaming and all of that stuff. And I was very hard on myself. And so my dad wasn't that parent that was over on the sideline, you know, cheerleading or screaming or yelling at the referees. He sort of sat by himself in the corner with a few of the other dads and just watched the game, right? And so my dad and I in the car after my games always had a feedback session, essentially. So it was, hey, Dad, how did I do? Well, it didn't go that smooth all the time, right? He'd be more proactive at times. And he wouldn't necessarily, you know, give me feedback on how I played, but it was more about how I showed up and the effort that I gave when I was there. And so there were times where he would never be mad at me or be critical of me if I didn't play well, but he would be critical of me from his perspective, didn't put the effort forward. And so that time in the car for me is something I'll never forget. I think some of the biggest celebrations we had in my career were in that car, but also some of the tougher conversations occurred in that car as well. So it was always that one-on-one time. And I equate it to a lot to the professional world today, right? When you give feedback to employees or teammates, right? Being able to find that area, an environment of comfort for both the leader and the individual, I think is absolutely key.
Whoa. So your dad was ahead of his time on that, because I think the idea of giving feedback on how you showed up in effort versus getting in the weeds on the play, he really gave you feedback on the stuff that you could control.
Yeah.
You know, versus you need to get better, you need to get faster, you need to get, you know, you didn't look like you were giving it your all today.
I think it was unique too, right? Because it was you need to put the effort in, you need to do those things, but he also didn't let me off the hook, right? If I went home and the next day, you know, I wanted to sit inside or I wanted to ride a bike or I wanted to do something different, he would always remind me and say, hey, like you said that you wanted to get better, you wanted to do this, you wanted to really go the extra mile. So now is the time that you've got to practice outside of the designated times that are practice or times that are designated for you to practice with your team. Like you've got to make that personal commitment. I mean, I tried to play baseball, I tried to play lacrosse, tried to do a couple of other sports, and I just never had the interest. It always drew back to soccer for me, and it became my passion and love. But I think it's the extra push that my dad gave me at times to, hey, go do the extra effort that made me fall in love with the game, but also fall in love with becoming a better athlete at that point. But it's something I've held tight as a professional too, is that you've got to put in the work and you've got to always stay committed to being the best that you can be at your craft. And I think that's something that I'll hold close to my heart, but also to my mind for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what are the lessons from being a D1 athlete as a CEO? I think you're already touching on that, but do you want to round it out anymore?
Yeah. So I think there's a couple of things that I go back to. One is time management. So time management is absolutely critical when you're a Division I athlete, right? You've got roughly 40 to 45 hours of athletic time a week, right? That's between practice, that's between game, that's between study sessions, that's between your community commitments. You know, fortunately for us, we were a part of a great community, but that also required us to go out and spend time in the community and do things like community cleanups and those types of things. So you had a big time commitment. And then you had another 40 hours of class, right? Because you had to stay eligible, which meant you had to take a certain number of classes. Obviously you want to graduate. And that was a priority for the coach and team that I was a part of. And so there's 85 hours in the week and you're like, I'm a college kid. I want to have a social life too, right? So you have your social life thrown in there. And there's just no way to do it successfully if you don't manage your time and really plan out what you're doing, but also being able to sort of hone in and control what's right in front of you, but also think four or five steps ahead. And so I think time management is first and foremost. I think also I go back to something I said earlier, like you can achieve more as a team than you ever will as an individual. And that really taught me that lesson. Being part of a winning team is something that I've strived to create within my professional life and at BellyMed as the co-CEO. And then the third is you're going to have losses, right? You're going to have challenges that face you. But if you have the right sort of mindset and growth mentality, there's really no losses, right? They're all opportunities to learn. And I think really embracing that to make sure that you don't make the same mistakes that you've made previously in the future.
Would you or your CEO be a good fit for this podcast? If you know a uniquely talented leader who has a story to share and a message to deliver, then we'd love to host them on the show. Go to benleads.com/apply to fill out a quick form where you can let us know a little bit about yourself, and my team will take a look to see if we're a good fit. That's benleads.com/apply. What's it like being co-CEO versus CEO?
Yeah, so it's great, actually. I think I shock a lot of people when I say this, but my partner, Andrea Tynich, is the other co-CEO of BellyMed. And so the way we're split essentially is I'm responsible for all of our commercial activity. So sales, service, marketing, planning and design, you name it. And she's the operations side of the business. So supply chain, finance, IT, et cetera. We are yin and yang. Like if you were to sit next to us in the room, right, we are completely different personalities. I'm a little bit more of the thinker, the I would say in the clouds, right? Like, what if we did this? Like the idea person, and she's black and white, like straight to the point, data driven. But our ability to work together has been unmatched, and I will say that it's been an absolute pleasure to work alongside her. And I truly think we could probably conquer the world together.
Was it an instant sort of connection? Hey, we get along, we can work together, or? How intentional have y'all had to be to foster that kind of connection?
Yeah. So it's really funny. So I go back to the moment we were informed. So we went through an interview process, right? And I knew what I was interviewing for and those types of things. And then there was a kind of it was under the disguise, right? Because our current CEO had not announced that he was leaving yet or retiring. And so we actually had a mid-year like leadership team meeting, and we were all there. We had interviews prior to, and then there was a meeting at the end of it, right? And so we went up in this hotel in Charleston, this kind of conference room, and I get up there and I'm like, well, this is going to be sort of the recap, feedback, next steps. And Andrea's there. I'm like, and she was our CFO at the time. I'm thinking to myself, what is Andrea doing here? And then I'm thinking, well, she's a CFO, so she should have a voice in this. And so we go into the room, right? And the team that was there from the board and leadership that was responsible for it, mm-hmm. It's like they laid it flat out and said, look, we'd like to move into this co-CEO model, and we'd like you two to do it. And mm-hmm. The person that made that comment to this day still says that Andrea and I, like the look that we gave each other was like, whoa. But also like a complete look of confidence and trust. And so we had the opportunity to go through a couple of months, right, of learning each other a little bit differently, spending a lot of times on long flights to Switzerland and different parts as we went through the rest of the interview process. And so we really got to know each other, and we have a great way of working together. We talk every day, you know, during the workday. Our spouses know each other. And so there's a level of trust and transparency there that if that didn't exist, I don't think we would be successful. Hmm. But we've been very intentional about trust and transparency kind of guiding our partnership.
Well, thanks for doubling down on that and sharing so much about it. So how long have you been in the co-CEO role together?
Yeah, so officially it was January 1st of 2023. We started sort of a transition process in October the year before that, when it was officially announced to the organization. And so we started the transition, but that time where we were interviewing and discussing the role was in June and July of that year. So mentally,
you've been through a cycle and a half, essentially.
Exactly.
The full business here in this role.
Yep.
When do you think this kind of model would work for a company? And when do you think it wouldn't?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of key things. One is BellyMed is one of those organizations where we're not huge, right? We're not this massive conglomerate, but we're also not a startup. So we're kind of in that middle area, right? Mm-hmm. So what comes with that are challenges, right? At times we want to operate like a large company because we're that size, but we also don't want to lose the essence of being a startup, being adaptable, being really rapid in how we respond to market and our customers. Mm-hmm. And so I think the size of the company is a really key part of that. And I think where we are in the journey of BellyMed is we have so much potential and such a bright future ahead of us, but it requires a lot of attention and work right now. And you have to be able to get into the weeds. And that's where we sort of started saying, you know, if we had one leader that was responsible for all of this, there's potential that not everything would get the right level of focus that we need it to. And so that's how we've sort of gotten to where we are today. I think in our situation, we both have grown up in BellyMed. And so I've spent, you know, eight or so years here. Andrea spent some time in our Germany operation and in Slovenia, where our factory is as well. And so she's been at BellyMed, you know, a whole of 10 years. And so I think being able to grow up in the organization gives us a level of credibility that an outsider potentially wouldn't have. And that's allowed us to have some really unique projects, discussions, because we know the history and we also know the goal and the future of where we want to go as an organization.
Yeah, that's a little unexpected, but it makes sense that since you're both sort of grew your careers inside of there, there's a lot of alignment to your leadership versus if you or her had come from outside the company, that there might be more friction in terms of the direction, but y'all are naturally on more natural line. No, that's an interesting point. What's one trait you wish you could instill in every employee, and why do you think it's so important?
Yeah, I think being open-minded. I think in the world that we live in today, I'll call it a post-COVID world, because I think COVID has a part to do with it, but I don't think it's entirely due to COVID. But I think we're just in an environment that is ever changing, and it's changing more rapidly than it ever has, whether it be because of a virus like COVID, whether it be because of technology like AI, whether it be another outside force that's driving change. I think every professional, if you have the ability to be really open-minded, the amount of opportunity that will come your way, an opportunity that you frankly had no expectation of, will quite frankly shock you, motivate you, and hopefully infuse a level of excitement that you may not have had in the past.
What's your most colorful story of when someone quit or was fired?
Yeah, that's a good one. And so I'll never forget, right? This is the worst part of any leader's job. And I will say this forever, that I'm a firm believer that if you don't get nervous, upset, challenge your own thoughts like a million times before you have to break away from someone, then you're in the wrong role, because you've completely lost your emotion. You've lost your touch, right? And so it's never fun. It's never anything that you look forward to doing. And I remember my first one, I had to let an individual go and it wasn't because of performance. It was more around behavior, attitude, and activity. But the individual was not happy with the decision and decided to very quickly pick up the phone and call as many people in the company as they could to try to get them to reverse the decision, essentially. And so instead of talking about why this was good for the individual long term, it became a fire drill and a firefight. And unfortunately, it was not a great day. I do believe that individual is a better person and better professional now than they would have been if they would have stayed where they were. And so I hope that at some point that person looks back on that moment and says, it actually worked out well for me.
Yeah, it's a long-term decision, but it has short-term pain pretty much always, unless the other person's driving the decision.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, and it's not easy, but yeah, it's not fun, but yeah, it's. I can see, you know, some people they want to try to save the situation, and
yeah, I mean, it should never be a surprise, right? That's my goal, is that if you're in that situation and it's a surprise, then you as a leader, you may have not provided enough transparency and feedback on that journey.
Well, you might have just answered this one, but when's the time you had an unexpected twist or failure in your career and had it lead to your success, your growth all down the road?
Yeah, so there's a couple. I think I'll go back on the professional side. So when I was in the field as a business development manager at BellyMed, I had a really difficult year, right? Where I had we're in the capital business, we're very project heavy, right? So there's a long, long sales cycle. And so you spend a lot of time and a lot of effort building up these opportunities to the point where they've got funds approved, the project timeline aligns to them placing an order. So I had a really difficult year. I just had a lot of things that weren't going my way. I had a lot of project delays. I had a project lose funding because they were building, you know, a wing of a hospital that it was a big donation from a very famous person, right? So I just had a lot of things that weren't going my way. And it caused me to be really frustrated. And I had two projects towards the end of that year that were really my projects that would have made my year successful. And, you know, at one point for me, they were done deals. And very quickly over a 10-day period, they completely flipped upside down.
Oh.
And I ended up losing those projects. And I remember vividly, it was New Year's Day, and I woke up. And it was really nice out in Baltimore that day. And I was like, I'm just going to go for a run. And really nice in January, it's like 45 degrees. So, but I was like, I'm just going to go for a run. I really need to clear my head. And I got like halfway through my run and just had this moment of complete clarity that like, I'm very thankful that that year is over. And I need to take a lot of the lessons that I learned from that year and apply it to this year so that I'm not in that situation again. And so that was one area where, you know, I had a really tough 6-month period where I was really questioning myself. I was questioning a lot. And to be able to have that moment of clarity, I think after that, really allowed me to adopt the mindset of, hey, a loss is simply that. You have to learn from it and ensure that you don't make that mistake again. There were mistakes. If I did the autopsy of those projects, I made a lot of mistakes. So that was a challenging time for me.
So you said a moment of clarity while you're running. Is that a time, is that part of your reflection process, is exercising? And that, is that where you get most of your sort of moments of clarity, or is there a different process?
Yes, I think it is. A lot of my time is around exercising. Obviously, as a former athlete, like I think it's not natural for me to not exercise or not move. I mean, if I don't, you know, do something in a day, I kind of get this like, antsiness where I'm like, hey, I got to do something. I got to move because it's just been a part of my life. Mm-hmm. And so I do spend a lot of time thinking while I'm exercising. Over the last year or so, I used to listen to music when I would run. Now I'm listening to podcasts and books. And now I've actually gone on a few runs without anything, just to make sure that I have that ability to kind of zone out, have clarity, and really think about the things that motivate me and keep me going.
Yeah, I really like that. It's a good call to action for listeners to think about that for their own day. Like, what can you do to get those moments? And it is like getting out. Sometimes it's intense exercise. Sometimes it's not, but it's just getting out from your office in a different place and giving yourself time to be. I know for me, if I'm not doing something and just trying to think a big picture, it's tougher than if I'm out walking or exercising, or even if I'm just journaling helps me. But just sitting and thinking, for me, that doesn't always generate the ideas that are as quality as the ones otherwise. How about for you?
Yeah, it's active. I think those time management hacks and kind of those things, like I'm a morning person, so I enjoy waking up early. I enjoy, alone time with a cup of coffee, and don't rush to my phone to check email unless, it's pinging off the hook, right? So I try to be very intentional with that period of time and giving myself the space to not only think and reflect, but also the space to sort of just, really dream almost, right? And dream kind of sounds like a corny word to a certain degree, but really to understand and spend that time creatively, I think is really important for a leader, because you can very easily you can wake up and check your email. Next thing you know, you've spent an hour on email, and then you have your first meeting. And next thing you know, it's 5:30, 6 p.m. And you're like, I didn't eat. I don't know what's for dinner. I don't know what's going on in my personal life. And quite frankly, at that point, you're doing yourself a disjustice and the business a disjustice, because in order for the business to thrive, they need to get the best version of yourself. And in my case, they need the best version of Dustin every single day. And I know in order for the best Dustin to show up every day, it's going to be the exercise. It's going to be the time alone to think that is going to allow me to do that.
So good. So wrapping this up, Dustin, what's your parting thought for our listeners today?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is leadership's a journey. And I've thought a lot about this leading up to today, is that you don't wake up and say, hey, today I'm going to be a leader. I think it's a journey that you go on. And I think it's something that you truly have to decide that it is for you. And it's okay if it's not for you. But I think doing the work and going on that journey is critical. I think for someone to wake up and say, I'm just going to be a leader, I want to be in the C-suite, or I want to do this, without doing the work is a disservice to that individual. And so for those leaders out there and those individuals that aspire to be to the C-suite, for me, it's always been about the work and about the people. And so don't lose sight of the basics of putting in the work every single day and taking care of your people, because that will take you further than any great idea or any book, I believe, in my opinion.
Thanks for coming on the show today, Dustin.
Thank you, Ben.
Want to boost your productivity and decision-making? Get vital insights from each episode delivered directly to your inbox. A great resource, whether you've listened to the episode or not. Go to benfanning.com/insight.